Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special podcast here on The Outer Haven. My name is Todd Black. I am the host of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast and the brand new 450 Wrestling Podcast, which hopefully is out by the time this releases. And joining me today is my co-host on NEP, Tyler Kelbaugh.
This just feels so weird. This introduction felt so wrong. Can we just say, and welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast.
Nope.
And then not Triforce Todd or Tellius Tyler. This whole thing is just, this is exciting, but also very weird.
Yeah. I mean, given the context of what we're about to do, we could have done like, I am Todd of House Stark or something like that, you know, and you're clearly a Lannister. Obviously.
I'm a big Lannister guy.
Yeah. Anyway, but
always happened. Day one Lannister guy.
Day one Stark. Winter is coming. Actually, summer has come, ironically enough, which is kind of appropriate, I suppose. Anyway, so if not obvious, we are doing a very special Game of Thrones podcast, our one and only, actually, because we weren't doing this beforehand when, because I came to Outer Haven after or before. I don't remember now. It was like during season 7 of Game of Thrones, and then of course we had that huge layover. So yeah, we never got to do it before. But given that the finale was last week at the time of this recording, and everything that's going on with it, we are going to give our thoughts on the finale, on season 6 itself, and of course the impact of Game of Thrones going forward in terms of, you know, historical and cultural and TV impact. So ready, Tyler?
I'm absolutely ready. Let's get into it.
All right. So, start off with the only place you really can start off, with the end. One of the most controversial endings in the history of television, and that's not me saying that. That's the internet saying that. And, I mean, oh, gosh. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, okay, I'm going to ask you this, because we had an interesting conversation on Twitter about this. What did you think of the finale, Tyler?
I didn't hate it when I was watching it, and I don't totally hate it. I think given where season 8 went, the finale was actually pretty good, all things considered. There were so many head-scratching moments. I mean, you have to me, you start in the dragon pit where they were declaring Bran the new king, and just that whole scene made absolutely no sense as to how that came together. I mean, you have Tyrion in chains, having Daenerys is going to have him executed, the Unsullied have him prisoner. We're told that there are these two armies, the Unsullied are getting ready to fight the Northmen who want to free Jon, and we never see any of this stuff. We're told what's all happened. X amount of time has passed. We're not really sure how much. Maybe it was 3 weeks. Everybody seems to think 3 weeks. I'm not sure
It was stated 3 weeks.
Yeah, and you look at that whole scene. It just didn't make any sense. Like, why are they listening to Tyrion right now? Why are they saying Bran has the best? I do think Bran would be a good king, but it just none of that made any sense. And yet, outside of that scene, I did feel like they did a nice job of wrapping up everybody's stories. It just wasn't satisfying given what came before.
For me, and I wrote the review of the finale, it wasn't the most terrible thing I've ever seen, but it was so far from the greatness that Game of Thrones is. And I wrote as the subtitle, it is not enough, to quote Grey Worm. Because unlike The Bells, which is obviously one of the most controversial episodes for another reason, you know, I felt The Bells was a masterpiece of storytelling, visual spectacle, and just jaw-dropping horror. You know, and then you get into Game of Thrones finale, and everything is rushed. Very few things make sense. Just about every named character not named Daenerys Targaryen gets a happy ending. And basically everything that they say or do makes no sense. And let's just start with the biggest thing, is that the beginning of the episode I actually kind of liked. It was, you know, Dany addressing the Unsullied and the Dothraki who somehow didn't get wiped out in the Battle of Winterfell.
that's a big one for me. And I will say that does harken back. Dan and Dave have done that in the past in the show, and we've overlooked it because of how satisfying the actual narrative arcs were. But having that many Dothraki there and the Unsullied, there seems like there was more Unsullied there.
Yeah. But we'll get to the plot holes, because there are many in a bit. But you know, they she's talking about, you know, breaking the wheel of the world, and that felt true to who she is despite her going down the tyrant path. And, you know, Tyrion throwing away the Hand of the Queen pin after he found Jaime and Cersei, which was heartbreaking. That was heartbreaking, and I know you felt the same way. Tyrion finding them in the pit was just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
or
in
the dragon's den. It was a tragic scene, you know, because he's the last Lannister, basically, outside of, like, cousins and all that stuff. But, you know, and that was awesome. And then everything after that was, like, wrong or terrible or bad. You know, it was outside of moments. I told you that. It was moments that were good. And then the rest was terrible. Because, basically, we got a nice, very, very, very long Jon Tyrion talking scene about why they need to kill Daenerys. Then Jon, in a long walking scene, goes to Daenerys, who hasn't even sat on the Iron Throne. All right, can we just admit that the whole point was to put her on the throne? She touches it. That's it. And I'm like, oh, gosh dang.
I mean, I liked that because that was in line with her vision.
But
in season
thing,
two,
was a
where
vision.
She doesn't touch it in season two. She does touch it here, but she never sits on it.
I was okay
with that. I thought that was good. And I really liked, I think you brought up a good scene that where she's giving that speech. They did a great job of kind of juxtaposing that against all the time she gave that same speech over in Essos, where it was really bright there and just like it was sandy, but now here it's snowy.
Yeah.
And she's saying the same words, but you're like, oh, this is horrifying because they're not playing that proud Targaryen theme. Like when her dragons come in, they always play that awesome song.
Yes.
And they weren't playing that here. It was just like, this is horrifying.
Yeah, and then the dragon wings shot.
Yeah, that was good.
Love that.
Yeah,
anyway,
I love that too.
So they do this big build up to Dany, and then, you know, she's trying to play it both ways, even though she doesn't realize it. And Jon goes, "You will be my queen. You are my queen now and forever." And they kiss, and he stabs her, and she's dead. That's it. And I mean, I was honestly at that point, because I thought I heard Jon exhale, I honestly wondered if she stabbed him. Because
I was
like, there is no way they can do it this quickly. And yet, she did. He did. And she's dead, even though you clearly see the dagger in her gut and not in her heart.
I thought that was where her heart was. It looked like her heart to me.
It's all about angles, I suppose. But, and so, okay, so Jon killed Dany. Oh, look, here comes Drogon. Oh, look, Drogon knows that Jon killed him. Oh, he's not killing him. What is he doing? Oh, he's burning the throne. Okay. And then he takes Dany away. Like, and that's it. That's the end of Dany, and that's the end of Drogon. Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah, really? No, I see that Drogon scene was interesting because there the line between cheesy and emotional it's so thin. I mean, you think of the King of the North scene, that really could play as super cheesy, but instead it's like a tear-jerking, powerful moment because it's been set up so well.
Exactly.
And this wasn't set up that well. Now, dragons, their intelligence has been stated throughout the series that they're extremely smart, smarter than humans. So I get that Drogon could recognize, you know, the throne has caused all of this. And I liked that scene. I thought it was cool to see it melted down. But I love Game of Thrones so much that even though this season disappointed me, I still enjoyed it, even though I would say I'm just as disappointed as everybody else was. So I liked that scene, but I see why you didn't.
But see, here's the thing. This is like, it's all about the context and what's supposed to be explained. Like, the whole thing is like, oh, Drogon understood that it was the throne that caused all this and Dany's descension to madness, but Drogon's never seen the Iron Throne, and to my knowledge, the words Iron Throne have never been muttered to him at all. And then, like, it was a Twitter meme that was crazy. It literally took like 4 still shots of the scene, and Jon is asking Drogon why he burned the throne instead of killing him. He goes, "Oh, Jon, you had to do what you had to do, but it was the chair, John. The chair was the source of madness that drove my mother to this insanity. By burning it, I am destroying all the social quandaries of this realm because they're so focused on throne." I'm like, I know that's what D&D were trying to say, but that's not how it got presented, because there is no chance in heck that Drogon would not have killed Jon, because Drogon has killed for less. And I know, like, oh, dragons are intelligent as humans. Exactly. He knew that Jon killed her. Jon is a guy he likes. Dany's her mother, his mother. Why didn't he kill Jon?
Well, Jon's a Targaryen, and we don't know how that would have worked. It probably would have burned him, because Jon's been burned in the past. But I see the dislike for that. That being said, I do think Jon and Drogon had a bond, and I'm willing to make that jump that Drogon got what was going on. No, I understand why people wouldn't be. It was, again, like a lot of things. Like, I loved the shot of the dragon wings behind Daenerys. It was a beautiful shot. That being said, it was really on the nose.
Yeah.
And this was the same way. It, like, very much like...
You
really had to try to not pick up the symbolism there. And it was almost just too much.
It was too much. And again, now, ironically, a lot of people predicted that the Iron Throne would burn. Like, someone would just destroy the Iron Throne, whether it be Dany or Jon or someone else. But this was, like, the worst way to do it. Also, fun fact, the Iron Throne, as stated by Varys, was created in the Dragonfire of, crap, forgot the dragon's name.
Aegon?
Yeah,
well, Aegon was the king.
Or
yeah.
one of the main dragons. So how did Drogon burn it down when it was dragon fire that helped make it?
It was just really, really hot, dude.
It was so hot.
It was really hot.
It was so hot.
Like, just,
anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So, but before we continue on, I gotta talk about Dany's death more, because when I wrote my list of all the characters who I thought would die in Game of Thrones, I said Daenerys would die. I just knew that of all the stories that had happened, the singular focus of getting to the Iron Throne would kill Dany in the end. And I said that, you know, oh, this is perfect. You know, she gets so close to the end, so close to the throne, and she doesn't get it. And I said that I would cry when she died. I didn't cry.
Yeah.
And I blame D&D, because this was the worst way to do it. That infinite build up of, you know, we have to kill her, what am I gonna do? Then the long walk, what am I gonna do? And then she says lines, it's not their right to choose, or it's not their point to choose, or whatever, and then he stabs her. That's disrespectful to Jon, who's the most honorable guy on this continent, you know, Mr. Honor above all else. And then Dany, who's had this beautiful arc from 1 to 7, and then 7, what do we want to say, like 8.2 or something like that, 8.3.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, she gets pushed off the edge, which I noted, I understood, I liked a lot of how they, you know, broke her down. But then she said, oh, she's going to be a tyrant. Okay, but can you prove that? I mean, yes, she burned King's Landing, but she honestly had a somewhat legitimate reason to do that. It was terrible. Absolutely, but that doesn't mean that, you know, she's going to do this. And it was just the way they built her up in the season was so rushed and forced to become this tyrant.
Inconsistent.
Inconsistent. Great word.
They didn't know whether they wanted her to be mad like her father, or they wanted her to just be empty and filled with despair, or if they wanted her to be a, I want to say pariah-like figure. I'm not totally sure if that's right. What I'm trying to say, like, she thought that she was this great hero, but she actually was this great villain, because we saw all of those. We saw in season 5 in the beginning at Dragonstone, where she looks like she's just broken. She is absolutely despair. And you could understand how somebody filled with that much grief could snap. Then they had her burning King's Landing and looking at the Red Keep and having that just madness across her face, as I would imagine her father would have. And then they have this final scene right before she dies, where that was pretty much old Daenerys. Like, when she was talking to Jon about being a little girl, that felt like old Daenerys to me. And in that way, she was that godlike figure who thought that she was just but had actually become corrupted. They just never... They didn't pick a direction, and they just, no matter which direction they picked, there was not enough time to turn her into that from the end of season 7. Because season 8, in the beginning, the first couple of episodes, her and Sansa are fighting each other. And I could understand people who would say, oh, I'm Team Daenerys in this, because look at all the great stuff that she's done. She's helping them fight. She was still a hero at that point.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the tragedy here, is that as much as I thought, you know, Sansa was a, you know, was a B word for what she was doing to Dany, you know, I felt that, you know, it was understandable, because it's like they've talked a lot during the seasons about how the North acts differently. They don't trust outsiders. They don't trust people from the South, and Dany's technically Southeast, so that counts. And, you know, I thought, okay, she's going to prove herself. And then at the, like, during the Battle of Winterfell, you know, Missandei said, you're right. She was talking with Sansa, and she goes, you're right. If Dany wasn't here, we'd all be dead. And she's right. But did Sansa care? No. And it's just like, she kept getting this literal cold shoulder, pun intended and not intended. And then all of a sudden, like, all these bad things start happening to her. So this notion that she wasn't getting the appreciation she felt she deserved and losing all of this is like, oh, it's driving her mad. Yeah, I can kind of see that. And I noted that in my reviews, but it just wasn't enough. Six episodes was not enough to turn her into a mad queen
yes.
/ tyrant / whatever she was supposed to be. And then she gets a 5-second death scene.
Yeah, and like, you hit terrible. The nail on the head. I mean, that should have been the most emotional scene in the show. Daenerys being killed by Jon Snow.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, yep, that happened. Like, we knew that was going to happen. And that was it. Like, there was no impact outside of the fact that I was just so sad that it didn't have any impact.
Yeah, I was hollow. I was like, oh, come on, not like this.
Yeah.
You know, let's compare this to Jon Snow's death scene at the Castle Black.
Yeah.
You know, it was you could sense something was wrong. You know, it was the end of the episode and you knew that there had to be a cliffhanger. And if you read the books, you knew there was coming. And then, you know, traitor on the wall and you're like, oh, the girl can kill Jon. And then you're like, oh, that sucks. But then they do, you know, boom for the watch, boom for the watch, boom for the watch. It's not ego. Well, except for maybe, you know, what was his name? Alistair or something like that?
Yeah, Sir Alistair Thorne.
Yeah, Sir Alistair Thorne. You know, his was ego, sure. But then, like, all the others were like, you know, this is for the watch. And then Ollie, the final one right in the heart, you know, that got you. Because you're like, even little Ollie is betraying Jon Snow. And that's why that was a very emotional death scene. Whereas this is, you know, you are my queen now and forever. Oh, they're kissing. Stab. So, and I feel bad for Emilia Clarke because Emilia is an amazing actress.
She did great. This whole season, she did great. And really, the whole crew, everyone was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, the only one I don't say was phenomenal was Kit, and that's not his fault.
No.
Like, he just never had a scene to really knock out of the park.
Yeah.
Like, you look at that Hard Home episode in season 5.
Yes.
He's
love
awesome in that. Like, Kit really sells the scene. It's
or watches
great.
On the wall.
Yeah. And in season 8, I mean, he's your main character, and they just didn't
side
do
character.
Anything with him.
He becomes a side character.
Yeah. Well, let's look at we'll get to John in a second. Let's finish with the
yeah,
finale.
Let's finish the episode.
So I said my thoughts on the dragon pit scene with Bran. What about yours?
Oh, I want to get to that, but I want to get to right before that.
Okay.
So let's set the scene. John kills Dany. Okay. Drogon doesn't kill John and burns the Iron Throne, takes Dany away. And then next scene we see is Tyrion waking up in his cell, and then we go to the dragon pit. I have the biggest problem with that right there, because you're telling me that 3 weeks have gone by and nothing has happened. Bull crap. Because here's the thing. In the earlier scenes, we see Grey Worm killing off Lannister soldiers who have already surrendered. The battle is over. The victory is Dany's. And he's killing them because they're enemies to Dany, which were his orders to kill them all. Okay, so what the heck happens when he goes and finds out that Dany is dead and Jon is the cause? Oh, I will do what is right, and I will arrest him and bring all the lords and ladies of Westeros in so that we can decide his fate. The frick he does! He's unsullied. He would kill Jon on the spot, or at least try. But no, he plays politics for the first time ever.
That would have been great, too, a Grey Worm and Jon fight. I had hoped that we would see that when Grey Worm was executing the Lannister soldiers. I thought that would be a good Jon moment, too. Okay, here's a tuss between Jon and Grey Worm amidst the ruins of King's Landing.
That's what made it so tragic. They teased that with like his grabbing of the arm and everything, and then nothing.
It would have been even more powerful in the throne room with Daenerys being killed.
Gone.
Her pool of blood laying there. Them fighting that would have been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I get that John was probably broken at that point and was just like, all right, you know, I did it. Do whatever you want with me. I just don't want to deal with this anymore. I just had to kill the woman that I loved. And this is awful. But you know, show us it. Show us, give us it on screen instead of just that big jump. And I agree with you. Grey Worm probably would have killed Tyrion and Jon.
Yeah.
I might
give Tyrion the pass because I don't know how he would particularly feel about that, but there is no doubt he would have killed Jon. Or if for some weird reason his honor dictated that he not kill Jon personally, there's a Dothraki horde who just lost their queen.
Yeah.
You know? Where the frick were they?
Yeah.
So you're telling me for 3 weeks nothing happened outside of Jon getting in prison. Bullcrap. Bull freaking crap. Okay, this is not Avengers where you have to do the 5-year forward deal to show the progression of characters. That worked. This didn't.
Yeah.
And that was just a huge thing. And all of a sudden, here we are in the dragon pit with all the lords of ladies. You know, Tyrion's, you know, get allowed to speak, which I'm not sure why Grey Worm thought that was a good idea. And, you know, Yara's asking for Jon's head, which I loved, but then she goes silent the rest of the time. The Prince of Doran is just there. We got Robin, who's now a stud somehow. I don't know.
That might have been the time to recast. Like,
no, that's still him.
No, yeah, it is. It is, but it may have been a good time to recast that role because he looked great.
He was a stud. He was a stud. It was like there was a meme. Was like, if he didn't like me at my, and he shows him in season one, then he don't get to like me at my. Shows him in season eight. Also, and I want a quick sidetrack here. I noticed that the Lords of the Vale were there. Where the frick were they?
Yeah.
Think about it. Battle of Winterfell, Battle of King's Landing, there were no Knights of the Vale on horseback. That was literally their thing.
They may have been at the Battle of Winterfell. I know that Jon Royce was there. I don't remember if they showed him in that actual episode, but he was there in the season 8 premiere. He was definitely in the, because I remember Sansa talking to him in the season 8
premiere.
Well,
that was it. That was the only time, but he was not on the battlefield, and none of the Knights of the Vale were on
the
battlefield.
Yeah, but we didn't need to see him there. We can assume that we're there. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Anyway, plot holes. Anyway,
he's not like a main character. He's Jon Royce.
Still. Anyway, but yeah, so the Dragon's Pit scene. Oh, gosh. I didn't like it. I mean, Tyrion, okay, Peter Dinklage is going to get another Emmy for that speech about stories and memories and what it means to be a king or not, but like you noted, the logic of Bran being king is broken, pun intended, for numerous reasons. First of all, since when was he called Bran the Broken? Okay,
that's
Tyrion just made that up.
Yeah.
Second of all, why does Sansa think/know that Bran can't have children? Because
she's paralyzed. She knows that.
But no, look, okay. It's proven that just because you're paralyzed doesn't mean you can't have children. There are cases when it's true, but walking
can't get hard, Todd. She knows that.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, aside from that, the idea that Bran's story is greater than all the rest of the people there is ludicrous, because Bran should know more than anyone that Sansa would have been better. Granted, Sansa would never have accepted. She is all about the North, and I'm fine with that. Arya had a better story. She wouldn't have done it, and that's fine. Heck, I wouldn't even say Tyrion had a better story.
Yeah.
But he didn't get that chance, and so it's like, but then the ceiling for me of how ludicrous this was when Tyrion asked Bran, will you do this? Will you be our king? And Bran looks at him and goes, why do you think I made it all the way down here? Or something like that.
Yeah, why do you think I came all the way down here?
Well, okay, yeah.
After literally the entire season saying, I'm not a human, I don't want power, it's not for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but the king, that sounds great. You know what would have really helped is if they had, I don't know, a guy from a royal family of old, a male would probably help if they were trying to pick one out. Maybe a guy who defeated the White Walkers and saved all of humanity and was the rightful king. If they had that guy just sitting around somewhere, that would be great if they said maybe he should be king.
Yeah.
But wait, the Unsullied said, well, we're not going to let him be king. So, you know, we have to listen to the Unsullied.
And I'll get to that in a second. But here's the thing, like, and you noted it before. In season 7, right before the end, the girl, the female Reed,
Mira,
right. She was leaving, and Bran goes, "That's I understand." And, you know, she's like, you don't have anything to say? What's left there to say? And she goes, Bran. And she goes, I'm not Bran. I remember what it was like to be Bran, but I'm not him anymore. I'm the Three-Eyed Raven. He's been saying for seasons that he is the Three-Eyed Raven. And now it's like, oh, yeah, about that. I'm good. I'll be king. Yeah, Three-Eyed Raven king. Hi-o. What's that? I know the future now, so I can make all the perfect predictions on how to do that. That's not how it's supposed to work.
Did he know the future? Like, his powers going so unexplored.
Yes.
That's true for so many. I mean, you look at the White Walker, same thing for them. Just how did he... What is the scope of his power? Can he see the future?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of stuff he just straight up doesn't know. Like, he didn't know that Lyanna got married to Rhaegar. Sam had to tell him that.
Okay, well, hold on. Yes and no. Okay, remember, the Three-Eyed Raven is the memory of the world, and the Three-Eyed Raven who came before Bran was waiting for Bran. He knew that Bran was coming, and he knew that Bran would be, you know, the person to take his powers. So the future is there. Then when Bran got imbued with all of the Three-Eyed Raven's abilities, he saw visions of the future. He just didn't realize it. One of them was the dragon over King's Landing, which they showed in the Bells. So he does have the power of the future. It's just that using the Lyanna Rhaegar thing as an example, he still was comprehending it, and he couldn't see everything because he didn't think to see everything. Once Sam told him, "Oh, that happened," he could, I know where to look. So
and that's disappointing to me because I like to You make a compelling case that he can see the future. I just so don't want to believe that the Three-Eyed Raven always could, because this show thematically has been so much about choice. And then when you undercut that with, by the way, this character knows the future and all of this is inevitable, that just sucks the power out of it. It's just such a sad way to really... I try so hard not to let season 8 impact my overall love of the show, but that idea that this is all on a script, that undercuts the show.
It's just it was just sad. Like, okay, for the record, when Aaron freaking Rodgers hates how Bran became king, Bran's got the best story. Are you kidding me? Yeah, he said that on SportsCenter. Right, that's how angry he was. So, you know, it made no sense that Bran was king. And for the record, then everyone was agreeing with him. I'm sorry, Yara, didn't you just say that, you know, you should kill Jon Snow, and now you're voting for his brother to be king? And here's another thing. When Sansa demanded that the North be released from the hold of the kingdoms, why didn't Yara say the same thing?
Yeah.
The Iron Islands have been fighting for freedom forever.
Well, you know, Daenerys granted them freedom. Like,
no, Daenerys granted them freedom on the clause that they changed their ways from pillaging and all the other things.
Right.
So that was her deal. And like Yara said, I pledged my loyalty to Daenerys, and now she suddenly is following a Stark, which her father would have killed her for. So it was just so messed up. And then there was just all these jumps of logic, like how King's Landing went from this ruin to everything's now suddenly pretty much okay, so that we could have the small council scene. Like, really?
Yeah, how much did we see of King's Landing? Because I remember the Dragon Pit, I'm willing to believe, was untouched.
Oh, yeah, that was on the outskirts of the city, so that was fine, because that was the entire point of the pit. But the Red Keep was basically all destroyed, which was where the small council was. And Tyrion even walked through it during the beginning of the episode, and then at the end of the episode, it's fine, everything's decorated, oh, here's the new small castle, we'll get to them in a second, you know, everything is fine, and, like, everything is pretty much fixed. They talk about things that aren't fixed, like the ports and everything, but you're telling me that in 3 weeks, suddenly, everything's rebuilt? Who rebuilt it? Wasn't the people, it wasn't the Unsullied, it dang sure wasn't the Dothraki, who were mysteriously absent, again. Did they somehow go and charge back at the White Walkers? I mean, like, what happened there?
The Dothraki, like, you see them at the end, like, boarding ships. And, remember how terrified they were of...
Hold on. Did you actually see them board the ships? Because I only saw the Unsullied.
They're at the docks. The Dothraki are at the docks.
Lame.
And, like, they called the ocean the Poison Sea.
Yeah.
And now they're like, we're good. We're sailing folk now.
Yeah.
Just the inconsistencies throughout
Terrible. And which brings me to my one of my personal biggest problems outside of the 3 week time jump where nothing happens. Everyone basically gets a happy ending. Bran is king. Tyrion is the hand. Bronn, Davos, Brienne, Sam are all the small council.
Podrick's.
Yeah, Podrick's a knight. Podrick's a knight. And for the record, I am okay with small council. I like that Brienne is there. I like that Sam is a maester now. Davos getting appreciated for his mastery of ships. Awesome. And Bronn is Bronn. Bronn is Bronn. So, although I don't believe for one freaking second that anyone would have listened to his deal about with him and Tyrion about him getting the Reach and now being a member of the Small Council. I'm just saying. So, but let's see. Then, the Unsullied, them, and apparently the Dothraki now are all going to the island of Noth. I feel bad for that island.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Let's see. Arya got a ship and going west of Westeros. That's where the maps end.
You mentioned Brienne. We have to talk about that scene because that was a highlight to me. Like, we can blast this episode for its failures.
It did
absolutely succeed with Brienne writing Jaime's entry in the King's Moot or in the King's Guard book, whatever it's called. Yeah. That scene had me tearing up because those two characters had such a great journey together, and they absolutely messed it up a little bit with the Jaime sleeping with her thing and then leaving. I'm fine with him leaving, but if he's going to leave, don't have him sleep with her. Anyway.
Brienne and Tormund.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Her, because he knighted her. That was something that she had always wanted.
That she thought was
unattainable. And then here she is kind of fulfilling what he always wanted. He remembered there's a scene in, I think, season four, or maybe it's season five, I think it's season four, him looking, reading the book, and Joffrey comes in and is like, "Yo, let's look at your entry, uncle," and it's just empty.
It's got like a few lines, because he was a Kingslayer, so.
Yeah, and he's haunted by it, and he wants to be recognized for his deeds, and here's Brienne kind of paying back the knighting sequence, with her filling out his book with all of his accomplishments. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on this because the scene itself was beautiful for all the reasons you said. And no matter what happened to her with him, she was still loyal. And when she found out, I'm guessing from Tyrion, that Jaime died in this way, she knew that the only way to truly honor his memory was to make sure that his memory was known. And the only way she could do that was through the book. And that just shows what a great character Brienne is, and wonderfully acted by Gwendolyn Christie, who once again was wasted in Star Wars.
Yes.
Dear gosh. Okay, sorry, calm me down. So, yes, I get why she did that. But on the other side, which many people have noted, it sucks that she had to do that at all. Not in the sense that Jaime died, but he died after, sleeping with her, after saying he was going to stay with her, and then after hearing about what was going on with Dany, Dagon got killed. I got to go protect Cersei now. Okay. It made that whole thing, that quote unquote payoff, just feel horrible. It's just like, oh gosh. So.
Yeah. As I said, I try not to let the failures of this season poison the rest of the show. And if you just look at all the stuff that they had done together before that, seeing it paid off here, I did like. But I totally get it.
I sense your anger. Let your hate flow through you. All right. So, and then continuing on with the endings. And then there was Jon. Jon, who gets exiled to the Night Watch. Wait, the Night Watch still exists? Oh, yes, the Night Watch will always exist to house cripples and backwards and broken things.
There's no reason for the Night Watch to exist, though.
Well, that's the thing, is that there's three things about this. Number one, the Night Watch has no purpose. Okay, they're together. For what? Then two, you get to Castle Black, and who's waiting for you? Tormund, which I called a mile away. And So then what happens? He and Tormund lead the wildlings into the north, which I actually liked because Tormund in, was it episode 3 or 4, said, it was safe to go back to the true north now. I liked that, even though he didn't get to be with Brienne, who he truly loved, just saying, Jamie. And so he and Jon get to lead the wildlings into there, and it's like a quote unquote full circle moment because the series technically started north of the wall, and now it's ending north of the wall, and hey, it's a good moment. But here's the problem. Here's the big problem. The whole point of Jon being exiled to the wall was to appease the Unsullied and I guess the Dothraki, right? Except now he's in the north of north. What's north of north? The north. Unwatched, untamed, living with the wildlings, which is fine. And the Unsullied and the Dothraki are on the island of Noth. Which means that if Jon was to somehow make his way back to Winterfell or somehow make his way back to King's Landing, who's going to complain?
Yeah, no, I mean nobody. He's
No
still
way.
John's out there. He doesn't want the power. I get that. This was a very happy ending for him, but I don't understand why he wouldn't be in Winterfell. He likes being north and all that, but he should be able to just swing by Winterfell. They tried to make it feel like all the Stark children were going their separate ways, and I'm sure Sansa and Bran will see each other again, being that they're both king and queen now of two kingdoms. John, the so-called goodbye for him, it just feels too much like they could just bring him back at any moment and be like, wow,
Exactly.
Bran is king, he is doing a trash job. Let's get rid of him. Who do we want to bring in? Let's bring in John.
Yeah, and that's the thing that a lot of people have noted about this season was that the entire, okay, not the entire, but the two big cliffhangers of season 7 finale was the resurrected Viserion destroying the wall, which was awesome in like every way that mattered, and then Sam and Bran figure Sam and Bran fa finding out about Jon's true heritage right as he's sleeping with Dany, and so it's this incendiary thing, as the internet said, oh, this is gonna just totally destroy the dynamic. And it did what exactly? It ticked off Dany, it got Sansa to play the game even harder, and then Jon's exiled and Dany's dead. Ooh. You could have done that without the revelation being told.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I get that John wouldn't want to be king of everyone, but that's kind of a theme of the show again, that they just undercut for seemingly no reason is, and they talk about it in this episode with John and Tyrion. They say love is the death of duty. And John has always been the guy who puts duty before love. And at this point, you could say, oh, he wouldn't want to be king. But he has always put his duty first. And I can't. I would have needed more time for them to explain to me how John would be completely like, whatever, I shouldn't be king because I don't want it. He's always done what he doesn't want to do. That's his whole story. He's been dragged along doing things he doesn't want to do in order to save people. He is the shield that guards the realms of men.
Man. Yeah, and then to continue that, when he is in these moments of doubt, who does he have by his side? He has people he cares about. He had Sam, he had Pip and
Bren.
Bren and all of them, and he had his Nightwatch brothers. He had technically Arya and Sansa for a time, mainly Arya, obviously. And then when he was king of the North, he had all of these people around him to get hear their counsel, even when it was stupid, and he had to smack their heads to say, "Hey, hello, death's coming." That was good. So he knows better than most that even if he himself wouldn't be a good king, that's why he has the small council. That's why he has the Hand of the King. I would have even been fine with Tyrion being picked by Jon to be the Hand of the King, just because he knows that Tyrion is more politically savvy than him, while he himself is the duty-bound lord. So he should have, I don't know, it's just wrong. All of it is wrong, and it was too happy ending-ish. Sansa's queen in the north. Arya's sailing for Westeros, which west of Westeros, which I, as someone else pointed out to me, makes no sense because she has never said ever that she wants to be an adventurer. She said she wanted to be a knight, which she now technically could have been, and now I'm just gonna sail away. And then Bran's king, Tyrion's the hand, and everyone else basically lives happily ever after. It's just like, that doesn't sound Game of Thrones-ish. This whole world's been built on the fact that happy endings don't happen like you think they should. You know, Ned Stark died 9 episodes in. Robb and Catelyn were murdered in the worst way, at the least, you know, at the place you would never expect them to die at a wedding. And, you know, sure, even the Hound. The Hound killed his brother, which we'll get to Gingbull totally. You know, the Hound killed his brother at the cost of his own life. That's not exactly a happy ending, but it's what you get in Game of Thrones. And then Cersei died miserably, which, you know, I can live with. But, you know, Theon. I suppose Theon got to redeem himself, but again, at the cost of his own life. So there are no happy endings until the finale, when everybody has a happy ending, except Dany.
Right, it was a happy ending for Team Stark. Like, the Starks got their W, and then the Lannisters and the Targaryens all held L's. And, I mean, outside of Tyrion, you got a fairly happy ending for himself, too. That was another just... Bran says he's making Tyrion Hand of the King to punish him. But that was the happiest Tyrion had ever been, was Season 2 when he was Hand of the King and just running everything and doing a great job. If they had given us a more tortured Tyrion in that final couple of scenes, rather than, yeah, like, I'm still me, regular old Tyrion, I might have been able to buy into his ending more. But yeah, as it stands, he just seemed like, yep, this is the life.
Yeah, and then I kid you not, when I was watching the finale, I almost lost it. I almost lost it during the small council scene when they were just starting to, you know, talk about how to fix everything, and, you know, Bronn's talking about getting the brothels back up, and Brienne's fighting him on this, and Davos is there and everything, and they do, like, that slow pan out, you know? I thought for sure they were going to end the episode right there. And yeah, if they did, I would have lost it, because that would have been the ultimate diss to the entire franchise, because it's basically saying life goes on. Life does not go on. That's the entire point. And then, thankfully, they went to the Jon Snow scene, which honestly wasn't that much better, but at least it was a type of a closure that I could at least understand to a point. But it's just, this ending was just so confusing and rushed, and even IGN, who has, you know, been infamous for their own reviews, basically said that the last 35 minutes of the show, which was, I'm pretty sure, King Bran on or something like that, should have been another episode. It could have been an entirely new episode of them rebuilding. That, yes, could have been A Dream of Spring, which is the last title of the last book that Martin will eventually finish in 2077. So, you know, that could have been A Dream of Spring, but it wasn't. And it was just, okay, everything's back to normal. You know, hey, King's Landing's back up and running. Let's get going. Hey, small council, let's do this. And it's just like, why? Why?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyone want to know the worst part, Tyler?
What?
Okay, so last Sunday, I had three major events going on in my life. I had John Wick 3, I had Game of Thrones, and I had a WWE pay-per-view. Okay? John Wick was first, and it was awesome. 4.5 out of 5, one of the best action movies I've ever seen, you know, great stuff. And then the WWE pay-per-view started 2 hours before Game of Thrones, right? So I watched the first 2 hours. It was good. Not great, but good. And then I paused it right at the 8 o'clock mark so I could go watch Game of Thrones. Obviously was disappointed. Went back to WWE to try and get my palate cleansed. And WWE actually does a worse ending than Game of Thrones. So I'm literally looking at myself going, the only thing that satisfied me today was John Wick.
Yeah, that's you hate to see it.
Yeah, like, there was Twitter debates going on about what was the worst ending, the WWE pay-per-view or Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones won. But not by much.
Well, so let's go back to kind of the root of where this all fell apart. Because it's very...
Winterfell.
It's hard to say, when you look back on something like this, like, were they destined to end this? Was it just when George failed to get his books out on time. Like, was that just the moment where it was like, yeah, this project is doomed? But yeah, I agree. I think I look at the Battle of Winterfell, and you got to look at season 7 too, though, as kind of the key cruxes. I'm going to go back to season 7 first, wow, because the crux of the closing act is the relationship between Jon and Daenerys, that they love each other, and that's somehow going to that love is now totally forbidden. A, because Jon's a Stark and he would never be down with incest, even though, you know, Targaryen's very cool with that. And B, because Jon's the rightful king, and that's what Dany has always wanted. So you have that set up, and it should work because we love both characters. We see how they would be attracted to one another. But it just never hit for me, for the same reasons a lot of things didn't hit in season 8. Like, they met each other in episode 3 of season 7. And then by episode 5, they're like shooting each other bedroom eyes, like, let's go do this. And it was really just after Tyrion had a conversation with both of them, like, Jon, you really should, like, bend the knee to Daenerys. And hey, Daenerys, you really should let Jon mine for Dragonglass. And they're like, okay, now we love each other. I never felt like they loved each other in the way that I felt that Dany loved Khal Drogo, and in the way that Jon loved Ygritte. That they didn't match up to me.
It was relationships. I always loathe relationships in television and movies, because oftentimes they're rushed and whatnot. I understood, at least in most part, Jon versus Dany, because, like I said, when they met at Dragonstone, you know, Missandei's doing this incredibly long introduction for Dany, and then Jon gets the whole, oh, this is Jon Snow, he's king of the North, you know, from Davos. That was hilarious, and I have a fun bit I want to talk about in a bit, but you know, that worked, and, you know, the way they talked to each other, it was clearly antagonistic. You know, they were, you know, Jon sees this girl on the throne, she's demanding his fealty, he's like, who the heck are you? I've got bigger things to fry, literally. And Danny's like, who's this idiot from the North who thinks he could tell me what to do? And then that kind of continues for a while, and then he asks for his advice before the wagon train battle. And I think that's where it really started for the
That was episode 4.
I know.
So, I mean, I was generous when I said episode. I meet in 3, and in 4, she's like, give me your counsel.
Yeah, but she's like, she knows that he's the old, this was actually one of the wisest things she's ever done. She knows that her counsel will tell her to do one thing. So she goes to the one person she knows that she has no sway over, and goes to ask for his advice, because she knows it will be 1,000% unbiased, especially by what Tyrion has said about Jon. So that made sense, because she's like, I need someone to tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear or should hear. And Jon apparently said, you need to take care of business, but you need to do it without burning millions of people. So
I
go burn a few thousand. So why not?
I disagree with that. I think that Tyrion was right there, and that's why she made him hand, was because she knew that he would tell her. And the same with Varys. She makes Varys swear that he will tell her when she's doing something wrong, that she always picked her advisors so that she could trust them no matter the circumstance. And that comes on the heels of them going through the cave together, where Jon is mining for Dragonglass, and he shows her the drawings of the White Walkers, and they shoot it so that Daenerys' lips look extra full, and it's just very – the sexual tension is there.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like – They're pushing that relationship so hard. But they only gave it maybe 30 minutes of screen time, from get this Joker out of my throne room to, oh, Jon Snow, he's a hero. Love him.
Like, it's not perfect. Just, it's not.
Yeah. And that's the crux of the closing act. And that really set up for why it didn't deliver.
Well, for me, the reason it really didn't deliver was, going back to Battle of Winterfell, is that the White Walkers were the threat. The White Walkers have always been a threat. Since season 1, right. Episode 1, winter is coming.
Since
winter is freaking coming. And, you know, again, pilot episode, you see, okay, you don't really see, but, you know, the White Walkers are the true threat. And, you know, you see this Game of Thrones going on, and you know everyone's an idiot. And then that's why Jon Snow was such a great character, because he's like, I'm trying to save the world, and you people are fighting about houses and lands and everything. And then, you know, the trailer that for season 8 was about the White Walkers. It was about, you know, dealing with that. And then, even though I have heard a very interesting take on why Beyond the Wall, season 7, episode 6, was terrible in terms of story plot and reasoning, I love that episode because it's, again, reinforcing the fact that we're all screwed if we don't take care of this guy. And especially once he brings back that dragon, you know, it's like, oh, we're all screwed. And then, you know, episode 1, it's the reunion episode. I allowed that. I thought it was good. I thought it was to the point. I thought, okay, here we go.
Then episode 1 was excellent. I thought it paralleled paralleled the pilot, and I loved that. It was a great it made you look back on the journey that you'd been on thus far. The idea of the little boy climbing the tree like Bran did and pushing through the crowd like Arya did and seeing that through Arya's eyes. That was moving.
It a 4.5 out of 5. And given that it was like, you know, 17 months or so since the last official episode, they needed to do a reunion episode, especially given the context. Then episode 2, which I know you loved, but
I think that might be, that could be in my top 5 episodes of all time.
Oh, gosh. For me, it was, you know, hey, it's our last night together. Okay, that's fine. Let's just do nothing and talk. That was it. That was the entire episode. There was nothing going on in that episode until the nighting scene, which is easily top 10 moments for me because of just how beautifully it was shot and the dialogue and Tormund and Brienne and Tormund and, you know, Brienne finally getting her wish and Tormund.
This is the divide, though, between us on this show, because I hear you say that and it makes me so angry. I don't get that. To me, the show has always been about character.
Oh, it is.
It's about character change. It's about destiny, and it's about love and duty.
Really, and destiny, like Jon Snow going back to the Night's Watch? Was that his destiny?
In this episode, it was 100% character episode. The first episode was, as you said, very much like, let's catch up to speed. Here's a reunion, and I thought they did a great job of telling that. This was the most anxious I've been the entire season, even more so than the actual battle, knowing that the White Walkers are a day away, if that. These characters are huddled around a fire, reflecting on where they've been, dealing with the fact that they're all probably going to die, reflecting on that, and seeing how everyone coped with it. That was so powerful to me. I felt like it was a masterpiece. The dialogue was excellent. We got Jamie kind of pleading his case to the council, with Sansa ending up sparing him because Brienne steps up and says, "This is my guy. I believe in him." Have him and Bran. Jamie says, "I'm not that man anymore," and Bran basically says, "You know what? Like, I don't need to forgive you because I'm not Bran anymore, and it brought you to where you are now." Home when Bran says that to Theon, that was a spine-chilling line, because you look at the journey that Theon Greyjoy was on. It was all about finding his home, and here he gets that comfort and reassurance that he needs from Bran, that everything you did, all those horrors, they brought you back here, right where we need you, your home. And that just to me was extremely powerful. I loved this episode for more than just the nighting scene. The whole thing was perfect.
I liken it a little to the finale, and obviously I gave the second episode a better score than the finale. I gave it a 4 out of 5. But it's just, there were moments that were great. Like, I loved, you know, the Jamie scene in front of the council and, you know, Danny trying to figure out what to do. And then I liked, you know, Bran and Theon and all of that. And the singing scene, which I know you loved.
Oh, the guy that makes me cry every time.
Yeah, and Podrick, that was Podrick's actual voice, and he's actually a really good singer. So, and the panning of all of it. But then there's the Arya scene. And I'm just like, why? And then there's
that. See, okay, so here's that. So I understand, again, the take, like, people have different interpretations of these characters. And I see the interpretation that Arya, you know, she's this trained killer. She wouldn't be interested in that. But season 7 Arya, I hated. They took away her humanity and just made her this killing machine. And nobody liked that.
I loved it. I'm sorry. The death of the Freys.
I love that too. That was amazing. But when she gets back to Winterfell, and she's just going at Sansa for seemingly no reason, for no logical reason. She's just, she holds a knife to her throat. It's like, why are you doing this? And she seems so detached.
No, she said specifically that she was doing it because she thought Sansa was betraying Jon. And she has always been more loyal to Jon than she was to Sansa.
That's what they wanted you. That's how they wanted you to see it. But that's not what was on screen. What was on screen was Arya is. She had no reason to believe that Sansa was against her. She was just like, oh, Sansa, you like ruling? You like ruling? Oh, okay, that's a betrayal. That's a betrayal. I'm going to threaten your life, and I'm going to take this piece of information and hold it over your head to destroy your credibility with the Northern Lords. It was such a reach, but the way that she portrayed it all as well was so cold and so aggressive that she was no longer the Arya that people loved for the most part. And this season they said, okay, we're going the other way on that. We're bringing her back to her humanity. And that's why I thought that Gendry scene worked. It was because I could see a human being being like, yeah, you know what? I'm about to die. I'm trying to see what this is like. Like that worked for me. I didn't have an issue.
By your own admission, that makes it even worse, because if you're saying, oh, then they did a 180 on her character, that just proves that they didn't know what they were doing in the first place. And now it's like she went from, you know, the cold-hearted assassin to, oh, I need to know what it feels like before, you know, I possibly die, which she has said in the past that she has no interest in love or marriage or having children. You know, that's not me and all that. And then all of a sudden she does a 180 at the end going, oh, yeah, I'm so done with this place. Just let me go see what's west of Westeros. It's terrible.
No, so I agree. I think that they really botched her character in season 7. I think a lot of people feel that way. In the end, in the finale of season 7, though, after she and Sansa kill Littlefinger and they put the past behind them, there's more of that old Arya kind of coming back. And in this season, we pick back up with that. So I don't feel like they betrayed her in that way. They kind of started to bring her back, and it was fine. I would rather have her be who she was this season than who she was for the first 6 episodes of season 7.
Anyway, let's move, because I want to get back to the Battle of Winterfell. Then we get to the Battle of Winterfell. So they do the first 10 minutes. You know, we're following Sam. We're seeing all the people going throughout their ways, and then, you know, the battle starts, and I honestly didn't have the darkness issue, but that might have just been because I was on my phone. But, you know, it worked out, and the battle was intense, even though the strategy, as I noted, was the dumbest thing ever. I mean, are you seriously telling me that your first idea is to send a Dothraki horde straight into the undead with flaming swords and thinking you're going to win?
Okay, I'm going to defend it a little bit. Now,
I agree. You could try.
I agree. They could have had a better plan, especially with their location of the catapult. I guess you could make an argument for that too. Anyway, the Dothraki, we saw them crush through the Lannister army's ranks, and they couldn't see the Army of the Dead's formation one. So had the Army of the Dead been more spread out instead of that one massive front, because we really only saw them attack the castle. They didn't look like they surrounded the castle. They kind of came at it from the front. And had they been a thinner rank, you kind of like the Dothraki's chances of breaking through. How else are you going to use them? Like, they, unless you could perhaps send them in a different direction, like send them out before the battle and then hope that they don't run into the Army of the Dead and then have them come in like from a behind strike. But the Dothraki are horse lords. They don't fight on foot. They're incapable of, yes, of that. That's not
their, well,
that's,
not incapable, but it's not their strong suit.
That's not their strong suit. Not their exactly. strong suit. I get why they did that.
Man, if only I could think of a better strategy. Here, give me 5 seconds. Okay, here's what you do. First and foremost, you cannot see the Army of the Undead. They literally show you that you can't see the Army of the Undead. It's just this, like, wall of snow and fog, right? So you literally have no idea how many are out there. B, Jon Snow and certain other people who are still alive at this point saw the massive Army of the Dead. They know that they outnumber them. They say multiple times that they outnumber them.
We see on in episode 2 the tiles, and there's just a gajillion tiles.
Exactly.
For the Army of the
so you know going into this that you are outnumbered and you need to play it smart. And so you send your Horse Lord force to the unknown, thinking that just because there are, and D&D said this themselves, that it's just such a sight to this horde coming descending on you, kind of like what happened in the wagon train battle. It's just this massive fear factor, except the undead don't feel fear. And so what you should have done was A, not charge. B, do the catapults. Keep doing it. Light them up from afar. It may only kill, like, you know, 20 or so a shot. That's still 20 or so a shot you don't have to deal with. B, let them come to you. And instead of having the Dothraki as your main force, you have the Unsullied, which are a defensive unit. They are very much like the Spartans of old with their shields
right.
and their spears. So, you let the undead slam into the Unsullied. The casualties would be huge. This is unavoidable. But then, when they're pushing towards you, you know, trying to beat back the Unsullied, you have the Dothraki on one side and the Knights of the Vale, who again were mysteriously absent for the Battle of Winterfell, come in a pincer movement from around Winterfell, which we know is possible, and just literally pierce them in from both sides. So now you have the Dothraki attacking on one side, the Knights of the Vale attacking on the other side, you have the Unsullied holding the line, so you're basically forming a box. The undead is not going to run backwards, and at this point, you have Jon and Dany fly out on dragons, light them up down the middle, and just do, like, rows of dragon fire and death. And then that's the end of the Army of the Undead.
It's hard to imagine, though, that the Unsullied hold for that long.
Need to hold it forever. They just need to hold long enough for that initial charge. Then the Dothraki and Knights go in, push them all in,
but
dragon
you also
fire,
know,
boom!
It's like, you can't see the Army of the Dead. You don't know if they're coming around the other side. Maybe they ambushed the Dothraki. Like, if you have the Dothraki sitting in the wings, who's to say that the undead don't surround them before they can come in for the pincer?
They literally say that the undead don't do strategy. The most strategy
you've
ever
seen. No, but
they could
just be in that formation.
What?
They could just. So first of all, the Night King does do strategy. He's able to
barely
command his.
We're talking about the ground forces here. I'm talking about like the Army of the Undead move as a pillar. That is literally the thing, because they have nothing to fear. They don't need strategy because they are this unyielding force, with the exception of Hardhome, where they use strategy to get around the wall. But they
We've seen them use strategy in the past.
I just said Hardhome.
I agree with you that their battle plan wasn't amazing. It was very flawed, and the Dothraki charge seemed doomed to fail, and it did, compared because of the numbers of just how many guys there were.
Yeah.
But they couldn't see; they didn't know what was out there or how the undead were approaching.
But that's
the fight.
Problem. No, that's wrong though. They did know what was coming. They had seen them beyond the wall. They had literally saw the Night King and his forces.
They knew that there
the
were
wall.
A lot of them, but they did not know how they were going to approach the castle. They
Except
had no
they
idea.
They did, because they literally said that they had just taken out the last hearth. That was literally the point, because Tormund, you know, the greatest guy on God's green earth.
Last hearth.
What?
The last hearth.
Sorry, the last hearth, the home of the Umbers. They literally said that they had to go around them because they were walking in a wall directly from the last hearth to Winterfell. That paints a picture, and that's how they knew to do the trench.
You mean to say that you don't think they could have possibly changed how they were marching?
Why would they?
On the way there.
Why would they?
I mean, they absolutely could have.
Why would they? But it's not the question of could they, it's would they. This is
yes,
they walk
they would.
In a straight
line. The Night
line.
King is trying to come and wipe out all of humanity. He has a plan. The Night King, that's say what you will about what they did to the Night King. Very fair criticism of how they kind of just ended that character. That guy knew what he was doing. Every step of the way, he knew what he was doing. Lures the dragon out to drill it with the ice spear. He sits there and just takes the fire from Drogon just so he can smirk at Daenerys to be like, look at this.
That was a great scene.
I'm still alive. That was a great scene. That was a great scene.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry. You expect me to die? No.
The living didn't use their catapults the right way, of
they
course.
Did not.
That was a mess. The idea that the Unsullied should be in front of the barricade and not behind the barricade also made no sense. I just don't think the Dothraki particularly fit into that fight. They just don't translate to that fight very well. I mean, as you said, fear is such a big factor in what they do, and you can't scare the undead, which is why it's so staggering that they send half of those Dothraki in. Really, this is the thing we should be talking about. Did the charge work? Because somehow half of the Dothraki survived it.
No. We know that that's the thing. We know the charge didn't work because the literal point of it was Lady Melisandre lights up their sword, cool moment.
Yeah.
And then they charge in, cool moment. And then one by one we see the swords go out. So how did the swords go out if they're still fighting? They don't because they're dead.
It was just crazy.
Yet, and then the capper here, we see some of them somehow make it back. All of them are not on horseback, except for Jorah, who probably noticed that this was going badly and decided to run back. Smart man, Jorah. So, and by the way, I called his death to a T. I said he would die defending Daenerys at the Battle of Winterfell. I'm awesome. Anyway, so, like, they say, like, we see, like, barely any Dothraki come back, and then all of a sudden, they have all their horses and are back at, you know, King's Landing. Really? How? Why? I don't know. So... it's just, regardless of strategy, the problem here was that even though this battle was awesome and they did a really good job of going from, like, full-scale war to, you know, Black Ops with Arya and then, you know, breaching the trenches and everything, the problem was that the sense of loss was barely there. The biggest character they killed was Theon and Jorah.
Yeah.
And Jorah had no arc outside of this because there was no way that, you know, he would A, get with Dany, and B, you know, just be a knight in her service. That would be kind of demeaning at the end. And then Theon, I was hurt by his loss, you know, but it's, you know, it wasn't the biggest loss. And then, oh yeah, we lost Beric.
Theon's death was like a happy moment.
It was. It was a redemptive
like,
moment. It was the heroic death.
Yes, he got his redemption. Like, good for you, Theon.
Yeah.
Did you hear, speaking about Jorah, I saw this on Emergency Awesome, but I'm sure I trust that it's true. They said that they actually had another script planned where Jorah also survives the Battle of Winterfell. And he actually lives through the end of the show.
Oh.
He would be celebrating with the Northern Lords in episode 4, and Daenerys would feel like, oh my gosh, I'm losing even Jorah to this land. And then in episode 5, he would be horrified at what happened, but he would refuse to plot against Daenerys with Tyrion and Varys. And then in episode 6, he would be imprisoned by the Unsullied and travel north with Jon and lead the Night's Watch to fill Jaehaerys' shoes as the Mormonts continue to lead the Night's Watch.
I can't even tell you how many ways that would not make sense, and I'm so glad
that
they didn't do that.
Worse, I agree. I mean,
if Grey Worm didn't kill Jon after killing Dany, Jorah would have.
Yeah, because this alternate universe, Jorah would apparently be torn because he would see what was happening to Dany, which is just not his character. He's loyal to Dany to the end.
Well, not just that, but the reason that Dany broke was that Jorah was gone, Missandei got killed right in front of her, she had lost one of her dragons, and she was basically alone. Jon wasn't who she wanted him to be, and, you know, Grey Worm's great, but he's not, you know, the best friend material. And so, but if Jorah was there, there's no way she would have burned King's Landing to the ground. He would have been there in her time of need and consoling her, even if it just meant by his presence. So, that would not have worked it well. That would have made it even more... you know, plot holy, which is kind of their thing. But going back to Battle of Winterfell, you know, there are multiple scenes where Jaime and Podrick and Brienne are like getting overwhelmed, cut away for 5 minutes, cut away back. They're still like, you know, hacking at the swarm. Like, there is no way. And again, the biggest deaths we got were Jorah and Theon, and obviously the Night King, technically, but, you know, it just. No. And then all of a sudden, then the Night King is dead, and I actually liked it, despite the fact of where did Arya come from, you know. And then all of a sudden, it's like the whole storyline is gone. It's just gone. It's like, what about the symbols? What about the meaning? And I loved the plot thread that he wanted to kill Bran because Bran was the memory. Bran was the memory of the world. That's a great story thread. Build on that. You know, explain why the Night King specifically is desperate to, you know, kill the memory. Is it because he's angry with the Children of the Forest and, you know, the First Ones and all of that? But we don't hear that. All we get is the battle scene, and then he's gone, and, oh, now Cersei's a threat, and Cersei said, like, what, 1,000 words all season? Something like that? I
yeah.
don't know. It's terrible. And there was a very popular tweet of the Night King on the throne and everyone being zombified around him, and it went, RT, if you felt this would have been a better ending. And like there was like thousands of retweets, so you know.
Yeah, I love that picture. I don't like the idea of the Night King winning no matter what. But
it would never have happened.
Yeah, in a way, they were setting up for that for the whole show. Like, the idea to me was always these petty squabbles in King's Landing are happening, and meanwhile, this overwhelming threat is coming to just mess up everyone's day and make their childish banter look just that, at just pathetic and irrelevant compared to what's coming for them. So in that sense, and with Cersei not joining the fight, like, that to me opened up the possibility of they didn't come together so the Night King would win. But just it wouldn't have, that wouldn't have been a satisfying end to me. You need to come up with a different way. But at the same time, Battle of Winterfell being the end of the Night King, just, and that also felt wrong. Like, the Night King fights in Hardhome, and that's a win. And then they killed Viserion north of the Wall, and then Thoros of Myr was the other death there. Then he loses his first big battle. Like I just needed, they needed more. And I really look back at season 2, Maester Luwin is talking to Theon, who is just, he's basically, you know, Ramsay's got the Winterfell surrounded, and Theon is reckoning with all the horrible things he's done, only to lose the castle. And Maester Luwin says, go to the Wall, take the Black, and you'll be forgiven for your sins. And Theon says, well, I can't because I'm surrounded right now. And Maester Luwin says, well, there are tunnels, secret passages beneath Winterfell that, in case something horrible were to happen, the lords of Winterfell could escape. And I thought for sure that that was going to come into play this episode, that the Night King was going to overflow and they were going to take Winterfell, but a lot of, like, Jon Snow and Arya would survive by escaping through these tunnels with Daenerys, and they live to fight another day. But no, he just went down, and then it was on to the Cersei fight, in which we didn't see Cersei.
Now, I will say this, while the death of the Night King and basically that entire storyline was kind of bad, the way they shot it, the music
that was
for that scene, I had chills.
Yes.
Was like goosebumps. I was shaking because I'm like, I'm seeing, because Theon's basically dead at this point, and he's just walking up to Bran in slow motion, obviously, and he's walking in, the music's going, Jon can't get by Viserion, you know, Jaime and Brienne and Podrick are somehow still alive, and fighting off the swarm, and on, you see Tormund and Gendry somehow still alive, fighting and winning and everything, and, you know, Tyrion and Sansa are in the crypts, where apparently no one thought, oh, the dead would be resurrected in the crypts! Just saying.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
the whole internet knew that was coming, and sure enough, it didn't. Everyone's surprised. It's like, really? Anyway, and so you're just seeing it, and then he's just looking at Bran, and he's pulling out his sword, and I'm just like, I'm dying on the inside. I'm like, no, they can't kill Bran, not like this. And then you see the hair moving, and Arya comes in, and she does her epic, you know, dagger stab, which is honestly really, really cool. Go, Arya.
Yeah.
Even Drake gave a shout out to Arya at a music award show. So, I mean, that, boom, Arya. But, you know, that was so cool. That's like one of my, that is top 10 scene for me. Is
it
that
was. It was.
It was just so well shot in music. But again, it's all meaningless now, because it's like, now we have 3 episodes to deal with Cersei, which happened in 2. And then, you know, the finale was rushed. And it's just like, you have to wonder if they did this in reverse order, if they took out Cersei first, and then they went to the Dragon's Madness and, you know, her maybe dying in the Battle of Winterfell, which could have been episode 5, and, you know, maybe her realizing, Dany realizing, maybe I need to do something big, and, you know, not working, and I have to sacrifice myself to get rid of the Night King, and blah, blah, blah. It would have been a better ending.
That's a great fix, too. I mean, had they gone and dealt with Cersei first.
Yeah.
You look at the whole idea that Tyrion felt like they needed to go north of the Wall to get Cersei to fight with them. Like, he should know Cersei better than that. Like, that was just a total character disconnect that somehow Tyrion is now somehow Mr. Cersei's going to do the right thing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, a lot of people mentioned, ever since season 7, I don't count 6 because that was extenuating circumstances, but ever since season 7, Tyrion's an idiot.
Yeah, no, I stand up for season 6 Tyrion. He did a good job.
Yeah,
but
he did the best with what he had, and he actually did make it work for a time.
Yes.
And then, you know, when Dany came back, they formulated a plan to make sure that everything was fine. And then all of a sudden, season 7, Castilli Rock, failure. Hey, let's go north of the wall, failure. Or, well, technically successful, but I mean, like, the meeting itself was a failure. And then he's shocked. Then he tries to appeal to Cersei and say Missandei shouldn't die. Failure. And then he basically condemns himself to death by releasing Jaime to try and get Cersei out alive. Failure.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, what they did to his character just absolutely made no sense. But if they had fought Cersei first and had Daenerys burn King's Landing to the ground. Now, again, if you do it this way, you have to have more episodes because you have to build up Mad King Daenerys. Regardless if she's going, or Mad Queen Daenerys, if she's going to do this, you have to give it time. But let's imagine that they, you have the White Walkers coming in from the north, and you have Daenerys fighting Cersei in the south, and Jon is like, okay, we need these people to win. We're going to go, and we're going to help them. And they could slow the White Walkers' march down. That's not a big deal. You have Daenerys do what she does. And then you have Jon say, oh my god, she just roasted the citizens of King's Landing alive. But I need her army. Like, what do I do from here? That's
exactly
an interesting question.
And then it would have given even more of tension to Sansa, who again was acting like a real, you know, B-word at the beginning. But if she had heard or seen, whatever, what Dany did at King's Landing, then she could have tried to appeal to Jon and say, like, Jon, you saw what she did. Imagine if we try to turn against her now, she'll burn us. She'll burn Winterfell to the ground. That would have at least given more credibility to Jon stabbing her at the end versus, you know, just the whole Tyrion talk, you know, because now it's family appealing to her. So, yeah, gosh. And that's the only thing that I give hope to is that because of now how this has ended, there's no way it's going to end the same in the books.
Yeah.
Because and Morton has agreed to this himself. He's like, even though he told the D&D what he was outlining and all that, he said himself that no matter what, there's going to be differences because, A, he's already admitted that D&D changed the major fate of one character. There are characters in the books that weren't in the show, like Lady Stoneheart and a bunch of other ones. I think there's another Greyjoy that was introduced in the books. And so all those characters are going to play an effect on the ending, and now he has this to go, okay, that really sucked, so let's do it differently in the books. It won't have to be big changes, just enough. So when he finishes the series in 2077, you know, we'll be able to see, oh, this is how the series should have ended.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that he finishes the books. He's 70, man. He's getting up there.
He's 70?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. He's not
I heard rumors that he hopes to get Winds out in 2020.
Yeah, well, he also said he hoped to get the next book out before the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
17 months ago.
Now, if he gets Winds out in 2020, it's doable. You know, people live to 80, so if it takes him 10 more years to get the next one out, it's doable. But it would be a long wait. We'd all be very old at that point. Yeah, no, he's done a great job, though, because I have the books. I read the first one, and it was great. And then I started the second one, and I got sidetracked, and I just haven't gone back to it since. But everybody's going to want to read this to see what his ending is, because it has to be better than what we got. Let me ask you this. Do you think, if you look at Dan and Dave, do you think that they're just bad writers, or do you think that they're lazy? Or not lazy. I don't want to call them lazy. Do you think that they were sick of the story and ready to move on, and that's why they rushed it?
Okay, I don't like doing conspiracy theories because I've heard them all. I've heard that they were just being lazy. I've heard that they wanted to rush it. I even heard that because of the Lucasfilm deal that I know you've heard about them.
Yes.
They're going to be writing the next Star Wars films or whatever. That they just wanted to get done with Game of Thrones and they just wanted to get it done as fast as possible until so they can work on the Star Wars thing. I don't prescribe to that because that would be very mean-spirited, and it's clear that they do love this franchise and this fan base. That being said, some of these episodes were really, you know, kind of lackluster, or they focused on certain things instead of other things that they obviously should have. And whether it's writing, the ending was bad writing. The ending was bad writing 1,000%. The bells was good writing, but I understood a lot of the criticism over, you know, Danny just snapping and saying, screw it, I'm burning them all.
If you know, the bells is exactly as it was, the exact same episode, but with appropriate buildup, with 4 or 5 episodes of Danny's descent, we're hailing it as the best episode in Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
Beautifully shot, beautiful music, beautifully scored. The characters are the Clegane Bowl. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Clegane Bowl. That was so terrifying, okay?
Yeah.
Us seeing, you know, the mountain and it has, you know, his evolved form, you know, and then the nothing that the Hound is doing is killing him. He's like, why don't you just die and all that? And the stab to the head doesn't do it. So he's like, ah, screw it. Charge. And, you know, you know, and like that was a good thing. And, you know, I don't want to fault the writers, because I'm a writer myself. You know this. And I, if you were to ask me how I would end Game of Thrones personally, I honestly don't know. I mean, I've shot out, you know, theories and, you know, maybe doing the reversal. And I totally agree that more episodes was needed. But I can't speak to the motivation for D&D for doing what they did, because I don't know what they were thinking. I do think it's telling that for the first time ever, there was not a behind the scenes of the finale episode. And
I know,
said,
I didn't like that. I wanted this behind the scenes.
And I mean, granted, you know, the fans have honestly been roasting them because of their recent ones, like how Danny forgot about the Iron Fleet. And my personal favorite was, you know, Danny only got into the fight at the Battle of Winterfell because the Dothraki were their family, and she saw her family get wiped out. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You just said that Danny's family is Dothraki, and yet it was by her orders that they charged to their death. So how does that work exactly?
Yeah.
But I don't want to say it's bad writing, but you have to blame the writing, at least for a part of this, because the finale just was bad. I loved your response to me on Twitter when I asked you what you thought. Your exact words was, I liked it, ? It's like, I liked it, you know? It's like you were struggling to find the words, and that's the problem. When you're struggling to find the words of how you feel of the finale and you're not emotional, that's when you do something wrong. And there are so many plot holes, so many teases that meant nothing, so many storylines that were built up for 7 seasons and they resulted in nothing. John's lineage, you know, they were teasing or how many prophecies, and none of them exactly came true. Also, Arya, they were teasing her to do something big in the final episode, and nothing. So it's just, they clearly made a decision to do something, and it was just the wrong something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the problem.
I have to, like, to me, this whole season and last season comes down, like, the stuff people didn't like, it just, that comes down to the writing 100%. And Dan and Dave, like, they were adopting George R. R. Martin's work. So maybe there's a chance that they just never really understood the story that they were telling.
I don't know. I hate to disparage other writers, but there's
no.
Just,
I agree. When I said lazy, I immediately wanted to take it back, because
no,
I can't speak to that.
You have to say it. It's just there's always this problem of, you know, what is the intent versus what is the vision, and with this one, they, as much as Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter diverged from what the books did, and they did in some major ways at times, it worked out in the end because of how it was written, how it was shot. D&D had the unfortunate task of having to basically tell 2 books worth of stories in 2 seasons, which by their own hand, they shortened to 7 and 6. When clearly, especially 8, I don't know about 7, but 8 could have been 10 episodes long.
Yeah, yeah.
And
this,
so,
I mean, 7 could have been 2. They just, they, there was a lot of different ways they could have gone about doing it.
But it's just one of those things where you you have to look at it and say, where is the problem here? And it's not the actors. It wasn't the directing, for the most part. And, you know, apparently the Battle of Winterfell is really dark. Really dark. But it does come down to writing. And I'm thinking about this as a writer, and I'm looking at the script, or I'm picturing myself looking at the script and looking at D&D and going, wait, why does this happen? Explain this to me. How does this work? You know, and on and on and on. And I can't think of them giving me any good answers. And that's why a lot of people are angry about this ending, because a lot of the plot didn't make sense. It basically belittled everything that happened in both season 8 and before. And it doesn't feel very Game of Thrones. Yeah. And that's the tragedy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I agree fully. I look at the season and I think all of this stuff makes sense if you really squint. But after a while, you just get tired of squinting. And it's there, like, yeah, I'm
after a while, your eyes hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. There have only been a few endings, like endings in series finales, that I have walked away from disappointed or not sure if that was the best ending. One was Legend of Korra, which I actually did a Facebook Live on recently to talk about how it paralleled to Game of Thrones. And then, you know, Game of Thrones, you know. I even caught Lost during a binge watch and back during the great G4 era. And, you know, I actually, for the most part, liked the ending. I mean, I understood what people were saying and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I liked it for the most part. I felt less terrible about Lost than I did about Game of Thrones. And that's saying something.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But did you finish Breaking Bad?
I'm still 4 episodes to go. This was before Game of Thrones came back and certain other things happened in my life. But I will finish it. I have heard great things.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's to me the number one show. Like, I used to debate in my head, which one do I like more, Breaking Bad or Thrones? And now there's no debate.
There's Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad is.
Which I know you're going to hate me for, but if we're comparing series to series, I still like Game of Thrones.
I can't, like, as a writer, Breaking Bad is perfect. It is perfect.
No. Sorry. That's another podcast for another time. But, maybe we should do that podcast. That'd be a great one. Get Sarah on here and debate TV shows and all that. But in the end, like you said, we should look at the series as a whole. And Game of Thrones is an accomplishment. It is taking fantasy television to a level that truly has never gone before, with the spectacle, the lore, the fan base, the response, the Emmys. Dear gosh, all these Emmys that it's gotten. You know, it's still a great show. It's just one that sadly fizzled out under its own weight. And that's a tragedy. I'm still going to – I'll binge watch it again someday, I'm sure. HBO – or they'll have like a watch-a-thon on Xfinity, and I'll just binge watch it all, you know, and I'll be happy. But – and I still have fond memories. I'm glad I watched the show, and I'm glad I was here for the final season. It's just, sadly, the ending was kind of terrible.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely love Game of Thrones overall. Very disappointed in episodes 3 through 6 of this season. And I think it goes back to season 7. And I think that was the kind of the beginning of the end.
Yeah. A lot of people think it that way. So, all right, so with that, we are ending this Game of Thrones look back. Let us know what you felt about the final season, the series finale, and how you look at Game of Thrones as a whole. We look forward to talking to you about it. And be sure to check out all the other podcasts here on The Outer Hater, from NEP to the A1 podcast, War of Infinite Panels, the new 450 podcast, and more.
And so, this week we asked you, what are you most hoping for? Oh, sorry, this is not...
Oh, yeah, wrong podcast,
I'm gonna ask
Tyler.
You
wrong podcast,
read our poll
Tyler.
About E3, but yeah, no,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, gosh.
I had the poll up this time. I was ready.
I'm sure you did. All right. So, for Warrior Will... See, now you got me doing it. What is wrong with you? All right. So, for Tyler, I'm Todd. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great one, everybody.